And I support really all energy development across all the various sectors, our coal, oil, and gas, as well as our renewables. But certainly it's an opportunity for Montana to create jobs, to create tax revenues, which can help support our schools and support our overall tax base here in Montana. And ultimately, it helps improve our national security situation, where we can have made in America oil versus dependency on Middle Eastern oil, which, as we know, is a very troubling spot today.
Are there regulations that you think are too strict right now that you think federally should be changed?
Well, I think we need to keep an eye on some of these regulations. You saw the closure of the Corret plant there, or the mothballing of it in Billings. That's an electrical coal-fired plant that supplies $3.2 million of tax revenue to Yellowstone County. And it's 35 jobs, including 29 good union jobs there. And I think there's always going to be a balance. My concern is the debate on regulations and environmental policies tends to evolve to the two extremes of kind of either-or type thinking. And I'm hoping we can find some common sense balance there of having more of a both-and approach that will allow us to continue to develop our natural resources in a responsible way. I grew up in Montana. I'm an avid backpacker, a mountain climber, fly fisherman, hunter, and so forth. And none of us want to trade off our quality of life, but I think we can find a way to accomplish both.
Of course, there's great debate about just why the Corret plant was closed, whether it had to do with regulations or the market.
And I think so. I think that's right. We want to make sure we're painting that picture in a fair and fact-based way. And it was a combination of both. It's a combination of a market that certainly is softer, combined with a capital investment that was required to meet some new standards that we're not going to pay out. So it's, like many of these issues, they're more complicated than they first appear, and we can't distill them down to 30-second political sound bites. But certainly, the regulation was an important part of that decision, but not the only part of it.
There are many conservationists and others, as you know, Mr. Daines, who are concerned about climate change. Do you think that is a concern? And if so, what should we do about it?
Well, Sally, I'm a graduate of Montana State University, and I received a degree in chemical engineering. So I tend to be one who likes to look at the facts and the data before making any firm conclusions. And I think there's reasonable people can look at the data and hopefully keep the politics out of this and look at what's really going on. And, climate change is very real. The climate is always changing. It's either warming or it's cooling. The climate is dynamic. It's not static. It always goes through warming and cooling trends. I think the question certainly is what part does man-made climate change factor in this equation, certainly with CO2 and greenhouse gases? And I think there's just still a reasonable debate here and whether or not is a significant part of this or not. And I think importantly the question is, what are the policy changes that would result from this debate? And the cap and trade approach here would put a significant burden, significant increase in cost to middle class consumers in their electric and in their power bills. And I think that is ultimately what we want to make sure we understand what are the consequences of the politics that might come out of this debate.
You mentioned that there is debate about whether human activity is contributing to climate change, the burning of fossil fuels particularly. My question is, where do you come down in that debate? Is it or is it not?
Well, I think the jury's still out, in my opinion, Sally, on that. I've seen some very good data that says there are other contributing factors there, certainly looking at the effect the sun has and it's the solar cycles versus CO2 and greenhouse gases. So I look at this as saying I want to keep an open mind on this, but I'm not convinced. I'm a skeptic right here, sometimes on both sides, because I think you're using their genesis just for political points here versus really looking at objectively the data. And I think there's compelling data on both sides of the equation now for and against that I think we need to continue to look and study this before making any firm policy-type decisions on it.
Senator Tester, as you know, has a Forced Jobs and Recreation Act that he would like Congress to pass. Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, let me tell you what I think on that. Again, I come back, Sally, as someone who's a fifth generation of Montana, and someone who has probably spent more time in the wilderness in this state than probably any politician elected at federal levels at the moment. I spent weeks, literally growing up and through my adult life here, putting a backpack on and crossing the Beartooth Wilderness, crossing the Spanish Peaks, Lee Metcalf Wilderness, and down the Taylor Hill Guards and around the state. My wife and I, in fact, got engaged on top of a mountain peak. So I'm passionate about the outdoors and about wilderness experiences. And I want to continue to work on this piece of legislation and make it a piece of legislation that will be palatable to the various interest groups across Montana, because there's multiple stakeholders on this issue, and we've got to balance certainly the need for access for our renewable resources in the timber industry. One of the concerns I have is that they allow 15 years of access to timber, and then that goes away, but the wilderness designation will be for in perpetuity. And so I think we're going to keep a look here. How do we preserve jobs in this for not just 15 years, for the next generation, and try to find some common sense middle ground here will allow us to continue to advance the purposes of protecting our environment, but at the same time keeping jobs.
And the bill as written, do you support or oppose it?
I would want to see some more modifications to it, but I'm keeping an open mind on it. I really am on this, because I think you look back at the legacy of LEAF here as a Montana, if I have the honor to serve in Congress, something that will be protecting our environment here for future generations. And I want to keep an open mind on this issue. And I look forward to engaging that after elected.
The other debate in Congress, of course, is what to do about tax cuts, whether they should continue or be allowed to expire for wealthy people. What's your position on that?
Well, I don't think we need to be raising taxes right now on people who are key to creating jobs in this economy. Ernst & Young did a study here in Montana, showed that 69% of jobs in this state have employers who pay tax at the individual tax rate, not the corporate tax rate. So this tax increase you referred to would hit the job creators in the state. In fact, Montana is number one in the country in terms of percentage of employers who pay tax at the individual rate. And this is exactly the wrong time you're raising taxes on individuals right now who are going to be key to this economic recovery, which are people who are creating jobs and hiring people.
So no one, no matter what their income, should have their taxes raised?
I do not support any tax increases at the moment. That's correct.
I want to move on now to Medicare, which also will be a big issue and has been for Congress. And the debate there is what should be done about that program and whether or not it should be switched to a voucher system, as the Paul Ryan budget suggested. What's your position on that?
Well Sally, in fairness, the voucher system was something that was the first proposed piece of legislation that got changed. There's not a voucher system in play right now. It is a premium support, very similar to the way that federal employees buy their health insurance today. And so here's the issue. The Medicare system is broke in 12 years by the admission of the Medicare trustees. In 2024, it's broke. The question is, how do we preserve it for those who are 55 years old or older today? And that's the plan. Those benefits will not be touched. But secondly, how do we save it for the next generation, for my kids? Cindy and I have four children. How do we save it for this generation so it's there? Because in the current trajectory, it will not be there when they need this important safety net. And so we're going to need to reform this system. We need to have an adult conversation about how to save it. And certainly the President's Affordable Care Act took $716 billion out of Medicare. And so I think it's disingenuous right now for my opponents to be talking about not putting a plan in place that saves Medicare, but instead saying we're going to dismantle it. Absolutely not true. We're going to save it. That's the plan.
Explain the difference to me, and I'm sorry I don't know this, between vouchers and premium support.
Sure. Well, a voucher was more of where you would have a defined, like a coupon here to go off and shop your health care. That is not what it's going to be. What it is premium support, which says, you pick the system you want, and the Ryan plan has the current system as one of those choices, and it's going to bring in some alternative choices here from the private sector, not unlike we have today with Medicare Part D, which is one of the only parts of Medicare that is working here from a fiscal viewpoint. And so then you pick the system that you want, and then the premium support, part of that premium is paid by the government depending on your means. Those who have more money are going to receive less support. Those who are most needy in our society will receive the most support in terms of premium support.
I want to move on to education now, and there's, of course, debate in Congress about whether Congress can afford to continue supporting Pell Grants as it has in the past. What's your position on that?
Well, you know, Pell Grants were funded at $18 billion a year in 2008. The Pell Grant funding has doubled now in 2012. And so, I mean, there's my opponent, in fact, has said I plan to eliminate Pell Grants. That's absolutely not true. But we've got to be looking at the real issue right now is how do we continue to increase revenues here to the federal government and by creating jobs so that when our students graduate from college, they have a job to pay off their student loans that they might have, as well as to continue to fund these important programs here for education. I have two kids right now in college. And so I'm very aware right now of the, you know, acutely of the cost associated with sending students to college. But Pell Grant funding has doubled in the last 4 years. But we're going to have to go back and take a look across all spending, across every area, and find ways to tighten our belts. But for my opponents, I plan to cut them entirely. That's absolutely not true.
But you do see some reduction there.
We're going to see reductions across the board in every area of spending. We have to. I mean, we're running $16 trillion of debt.
You also support private schools and charter schools.
Yes, I do. It's a state issue more so, but Montana is one of 9 states that does not have a charter school provision, and I think we ought to move forward with charter schools, and I think we ought to make sure. I really believe in school choice here for parents. Our children have attended the public schools. I have 2 college students right now in public institutions, one at Montana State University, one at Colorado State University. I'm a product of the public school system here in Bozeman. Went to kindergarten through college in public schools. My wife was a public school teacher. She is an elementary ed teacher and taught in public schools for several years. So I'm a big proponent of public education, but I also believe that parents ought to have choice.
Should those schools teach creationism?
What the schools should teach is as it relates to biology and sciences that they have. There's evolution theories, there's creation theories, and so forth. I think we should teach students to think critically and teach students that there's evolutionary theories, there's intelligent design theories, and allow the students to make up their minds. But I think those kind of decisions should be decided at the local school board level. I don't like federal mandates. I don't even like state mandates as it relates to what should be taught in our schools. Let the local schools decide what ought to be taught. But importantly, teach the students to think critically so they can come to their own conclusions as it relates to some of these topics like creation versus evolution. I personally, you know, I'd like to teach my kids both sides of the equation there and let them come to their own conclusion on it.
Mr. Daines, just a little bit of time left to talk about the horse race. Obviously, you've had more money to spend on your campaign than your opponent and have had a lot of ads on the air and so on. And certainly the conventional wisdom is that you're going to walk away with this race. Is that how you're feeling today?
With 8 days left, we don't feel that way. I mean, we're grateful that we've seen a lead in the polls. Mason Dixon had us leading. The public polls were out there. PPP had us leading. I think they're both 8 to 9 point leads. We had the endorsement of the Billings Gazette. We had the endorsement of the Bozeman Chronicle, the endorsement of the Missoulian. I'm not sure there's been a Republican running statewide in a long time that's received the endorsements of all 3 of those papers. In fact, we've yet to not receive an endorsement from any paper that is making an endorsement. So those are all good signs, but we're not counting on anything at the moment other than we're making 5,000 calls a day with a tremendous grassroots effort, a lot of young people involved in our campaign right now who are volunteering. Taking nothing for granted, Sal, and we'll keep working hard to the very end.
We're having speaking with Steve Daines, who's the Republican candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives. Mr. Daines, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Sal. I appreciate it.